Welcome back to The Deeper You Dive. Last episode, we broke down the first part of our album's penultimate track, Only Skin. We saw that the song is a narrative that explores the feelings of our protagonist as she navigates her way through a relationship. Of the imagery present, we noted many points throughout the song that related to physical love, specifically to sex. As we hop back into our analysis, that imagery will pick up right where it left off.
Stay with me for a while. That's an awfully real gun. And no life will lay it down as the lightning is lately done.
Joanna sings, "Stay with me for a while, that's an awfully real gun. I know life will lay you down, as the lightning has lately done." The gun here is relevant in multiple ways. On the surface, it immediately reminds us that our narrator's lover is characterized as a traumatized veteran. This idea is continued with the lines about lightning, as it is common for loud noises such as thunder or firecrackers to trigger a veteran's PTSD. If we continue down this route, it appears that our narrator's lover has become so overwhelmed with trauma that he is potentially pointing a gun to his own head. Our narrator stresses how real the gun is in an attempt to get him to understand the seriousness of this action and its consequences. And we should note that the words "stay with me" are commonly said to someone who is bleeding out. The gun can also be interpreted in an entirely different manner. It is possible that the awfully real gun here is a phallic symbol, that the gun here is meant to represent the man's penis. Our narrator says this to him in an attempt to get him to understand the seriousness of his actions, particularly his sexual encounters. This relates to both the sex he has with our narrator and potentially the other women in his life, as both of these actions carry very serious ramifications. The sex with our narrator comes with emotional promises that are shattered by his infidelity. Not only that, but the sex with our narrator actually conceived life. This awfully real gun has brought about consequences that severely affect our narrator's life. Joanna sings "Failing This" to propose the idea of this man failing to put his gun down. If we continue with the phallic symbolism, our narrator could be talking about failing to stop having sex with other women. She then asks the man to follow her to show her what he anointed in pointing his gun there. To anoint is to rub with oil as part of a religious ceremony, and it is meant to confer divine office upon someone. To be anointed is to be chosen, most frequently relating to being chosen by God. Here, Joanna uses the word to represent the conception of her child. She asks her lover to follow her so that she can show him what his actions caused. Her pregnancy.
Lay it down nice and slow. There is nowhere to go. Save up, up where the light undiluted is weaving in a drunk dream at the sight of my baby out back. Back on patio watching the bats bring night in. Well, I'll swear estuaries of wax white wand endlessly toward seashores unmapped.
She asks him to lay it down, more directly relating to the gun being aimed at his head. She then sings that there is nowhere to go save up. Up where the light undiluted is weaving in a drunk dream, at the sight of my baby out back. This implies that things cannot get worse. They are at the bottom, and things can only go up from here. The light undiluted alludes to the light of God in heaven. With heaven comes the idea of the end of life on earth. so this could perhaps relate back to the gun aimed at the man's head. More likely, though, this is used to suggest that this path, the one to their baby out back, is chosen by God. The light of God shining a path through the dark is undiluted here. It is pure and unmistakable. Our narrator appears to be convinced that they are meant to stay together and care for their child. The phrase drunk dream is curious because it combats the idea that of God's will with that of delusional drunkenness. Our narrator is convinced that this is the path for them, but these words reveal that she is love drunk. She so badly wants for this to happen that she has convinced herself that this is their divine path laid out before them. Though only faintly, these words should also remind us of the song Emily, where we saw Joanna struggle to keep faith in her religious beliefs. Joanna sings of their baby on the back patio, implying that these two lovers have a home together. The words "watching the bats bring night in" closely mirror lyrics in her song "Clam, Crab, Cockle, Cowrie." As she sings about being cold, waiting for the day to come, she sings that there are bats all dissolving in a row, oh, into the wishy-washy dark that cannot let go. Regardless of the symbolic meaning, these lines tie Joanna back to her home in California. Joanna has stated in interviews before that her and her family could sit out and watch bats fly around feasting on bugs at night, so this line here furthers the idea of home. Elsewhere, so not at the home that was just being described, estuaries of wax-white wind, endlessly towards seashores unmapped. The word elsewhere, along with the words drunk dream, seem to suggest that the depiction of the baby out on the back patio was a dream, an illusion. We are suddenly guided back to the water, which we have seen present throughout this entire track. We remember in the beginning of this song that the water was a river that our narrator was rowing along. We interpreted the river there to represent their relationship, with our narrator being the one that was rowing along through the river. While that can still be true, we should also think about what water represented in Sawdust and Diamonds. There was no river in that song. Rather, there was a vast and powerful ocean that rocked up the hull of the ship Joanna was on. There, we interpreted water to symbolize a great, overwhelming sadness. These lyrics here take a little bit from both of these interpretations. Estuaries are the mouths of large rivers where the river meets the ocean, and both salt and fresh water mix. To wend is to take a specific route, typically slowly. The river's destination, their relationship's destination, was always to the endless sea, to devastating sorrow. These seashores are unmapped because the ocean is so vast, so daunting and powerful that no one has ever been there before. Joanna is describing their descent into despair. Often when we find ourselves in situations of great sorrow, we feel alone, as if no one has ever understood our pain, and that is precisely what Joanna appears to be expressing with the closing lines of this verse.
Last week our picture window produced a half word, heavy and hollow, hit by a brown bird. We stood and watched her gape like a rattlesnake, and paint and labor over every intake. I said so.
Our narrator sings that their picture window, a large window in a home that you can see out of, produced a half word. We see the idea of a home reemerge as Joanna describes the noise of a bird crashing into a window. The scene perfectly captures the abrupt tragedy that occurred in Joanna's life. The bird here once again represents her child, just like the dove from Sawdust and Diamonds. It was flying towards our narrator's house, just as this child was to be taken home with her. Suddenly, there is a problem. The bird crashes into a window, a clear sheet of glass that the bird couldn't see. The bird smacking against the glass and struggling to breathe represents the potential abortion or miscarriage. The two stare and watch her gape like a rattlesnake. If you have ever seen a bird hit a window, you can likely envision this clearly. The bird bounces off the glass and lays motionless on the ground, its mouth wide open, gasping for air as its little chest rapidly rises and falls with every breath. Though it can't be said with any certainty what exactly went down with Joanna's pregnancy, these lines here clearly express the grief she felt in her situation. Unless you are a psychopath, it is incredibly difficult to watch an innocent animal die. Joanna likens that overwhelming feeling of wanting to help but being powerless in the situation to the feeling she felt when she lost her child to be.
Over every intake, I said a sword of prayer for some rare grace. Then thought I ought to take her to a high place. Said dog, nor vulture, nor cat shall toy with you. Tramp through the poison oak, heartbroken in Kuwait. The dogs were snapping and you cuffed their collars. While I climbed the treehouse, then how I hollered. Well, she lined us.
Our narrator says a prayer for some rare grace. And again, we can tie this back to the song Emily, as the words sort of and rare indicate her lack of faith in a just and loving God. Not satisfied with a prayer, our narrator takes initiative and proposes to take her to a higher place, a place where dogs nor vulture nor cat shall toy with you. Dogs and cats are common harmless pets, which contrasts the massive bird placed between them. A vulture is a despicable bird that preys on the carcasses of already dead animals. This implies that our brown bird here is either already dead or is going to die. And the narrator confirms this in the next line, "And though you die, bird." The fine view indicates that our narrator persists on taking her to a higher place to get some air despite its futility. It's unclear what this could specifically allude to in Joanna's life, but you can certainly feel her desire to give her child some life. Joanna sings, "Then in my hot hand, she slumped her sick weight." The phrase "sick weight" is similar to the phrase "dead weight." Dead weight is when something feels much heavier after it has died, caused by the completely limp limbs and body that make it a burden to carry. Joanna and her lover tramped through the poison oak, a plant that causes rashes on your skin if it touches you. This implies that the ground is treacherous, supported by the following lines of "the dogs were snapping," until supposedly our narrator's lover cuffed their collars and controlled them. The two are said to be heartbroken and inchoate. Inchoate means to have just begun, not be fully formed. While that sounds like it applies to the child in this situation, it also applies to Joanna and her lover, who were both young themselves, not adequately prepared to handle such a tragedy. Our narrator climbs to the top of a treehouse and hollers. This holler could either be her wailing in pain, or it could be her crying for help.
Saw the treetops, cocked her head and up and flew in. Back in the world that moves often according to the warning of these clues. Dogs still run roughly round, little tufts of fringe down. And the cities we passed were a flickering wasteland, but his hand in my hand made him hale and harmless. Well, down in the lowlands, the crops are all coming. We have everything. Life is thundering, blissful towards death in a stampede of his fumbling green gentleness.
The bird is then said to be still as a stone, clearly implying its lifelessness. The fact that it lay in her hand for a lifetime or two could indicate Joanna's inability to accept its death. Then, suddenly, the bird up and flies towards the treetops. The meaning of this line is revealed in the next, which begins with, "while back in the world," implying that the previous lines were not in this world. In other words, they were imagined. While we know that this song is an allegory made of Joanna's imaginations for real events that occurred in her life, Here, our narrator of this allegory has herself imagined something within the allegory. The treetops could represent the border between this life and the afterlife. After death, our narrator imagines that the bird up and flies off towards heaven. The phrase "back in the world" that moves often according to the hoarding of these clues is really interesting. In my opinion, our narrator is suggesting that the real world depends upon this impression of these dark realities, something she expressed in Sawdust and Diamonds with lines like, "And though our bones they may break and our souls separate, why the long face?" When we are asked the question, "How are you?" the response ingrained within all of us is, "Good," or "I'm fine, how are you?" regardless of the validity of these statements. I think here Joanna touches on the way in which we all must act like everything is okay when we go about our days, whether it be at work or hanging out with casual friends, etc. Dog still running around is a great way to describe the friends or people she sees following the death of her child. Here, dogs are being described as vicious dogs, not so much as man's best friend. It isn't uncommon for dogs to chase after birds, and I think that is the image Joanna is trying to paint here. Though the tufts of finch are on the ground around the dogs, I don't think Joanna is suggesting that the dogs killed the bird, rather that these dogs serve as a reminder of her dead bird. This is likely a way of exploring the feeling of when friends and family approach Joanna following the loss of her child. They are dogs here due to them being desperate for information. Though no malice is intended, oftentimes friends can be a constant reminder of tragedy following the death of someone close. They mean well, but their condolences constantly remind the person of their loss. Our narrator describes the cities they pass as flickering wastelands. This always makes me think of a city destroyed by war. What was once a bright city full of plentiful people is now only lit by flickering lights. After the passing of her child, Joanna's world has gone cold and dark, but she finds refuge in holding her lover's hand. She continues by describing the lowlands below them as abundant, so much so that they have everything. This should remind us of Monkey and Bear and Sawdust and Diamonds, where the theme of excess was found in each. Upon being surrounded in abundance, Joanna sings the words, "Life is thundering blissful towards death in a stampede of his fumbling green gentleness." I love this lyric because it ties much of the album together. In Monkey and Bear, the excess is promised by the male character of the story, and in Sawdust and Diamonds, she struggles to control her desires. This line ties these two together as we see our narrator has once again failed to repress her desire and finds herself surrounded in excess. This excess could be anything, drugs, sex, it doesn't really matter, but considering the lyric's fumbling green gentleness, it is likely sex. We remember the character Jason Compson, whose hands in his pockets foreshadowed his greed. We interpreted our narrator's lover's hands being in his pockets as a way to display his insatiable lust. Green is the color of greed, but gentleness implies kindness and tenderness. I think these words are an amazing description of a man who selfishly coerces a woman to have sex with him in order to fulfill his desires. The action feels gentle, tender, and full of love, but in truth it is an act of greed, a way to use this woman to fill a void within his heart. Thundering blissfully towards death continues the use of two contrasting ideas in one sentence. This line perfectly captures how our narrator is falling apart due to the actions of her lover and her own inability to deny him his pursuits. She finds herself surrounded in excess, abundant sex, and while pleasurable, it is the demise of our protagonist as she crumbles before our very eyes.
You stop by, I would all lay life in my doorway, we shocked and chide. And when you waved, I was gone. See, I got gone when I got wise, but I can't with certainty say we survived.
Hardly giving us a moment to comprehend what we were just told, our narrator tells us of a separate event that occurred. Her lover stops by, and she describes herself as all alive, implying her own lust for him while also suggesting a lifelessness without him around. Shucked and jived is a way to say danced, but here it doubtlessly is alluding towards sex. It seems that after they have sex, the man broke into tears. Though we have no way to determine why he broke down, this action sees our narrator get gone. In other words, her heart leaves her completely. Earlier, we heard a seagull sing the words, "so long," which we interpreted as the bird claiming our narrator's heart was already gone. A little later, we saw our narrator ask the question, "are you mine?" to her heart. At that point in the song, we knew this to be ironic. Dramatic irony occurs when the audience knows something that the characters do not. While we didn't necessarily know of an event that our protagonists didn't, we, unlike her, were not blinded by our own desires in this situation. We could and can see clearly, and have known her heart to be in the man's control for some time now. But here we see the narrator admit that to herself and to us. At the same point in which she realizes this, she also tells us that she got gone when she got wise. These two lines purposefully contrast each other. Within the context of getting wise, getting gone would then mean leaving the man, as she has become wise to the fact that he can only hurt her and doesn't truly love her. That doesn't quite fit with the previous line about her admitting that her heart is his. I think this contrast is used to express the dissonance that Joanna felt at the moment she is describing. In the same moment, she admits that she has completely fallen for this man, while also becoming wise to how dangerous this man is to her. Despite recognizing him as a toxic force in her life, she is unable to stop herself from falling for him completely, something many people have probably experienced firsthand. At the moment of discovering this dilemma, our narrator tells us she is unsure if she can say their relationship survived. Something shifted in this moment. The delusion is gone. Though the relationship continues, our narrator is consciously aware that he can only hurt her further at this point.
Then down and down, and down and down, and down and deeper, stoke without sound, the blameless flame, you endless sleeper, through fire below, and fire above, and fire within, sleep through the things they couldn't have been, if you had not been.
Joanna sings, "then down and down, down and down, and down and deeper." She's describing the part deep, deep within someone, the soul, their essence, their light. She tells an endless sleeper to stoke the blameless flames. We should be reminded of the fire that was presented to us earlier in the song, which represented the passion and love brought about by a relationship. The endless sleeper is the man of this story. We should remember that he was dreaming at the very beginning of this song, and describing him in this way displays how the man is ignorant to the repercussions of his actions. Joanna describes the fire as being both below, above, and within. This is reminiscent of Sawdust and Diamonds, where we saw the fire uncontrollably burning the prairie. This flame of passion that burned brightly within her heart has grown, so much so that the entire room is on fire. This is an adequate metaphor for the danger of love. Fire provides warmth and comfort, but it is also incredibly dangerous if it grows out of control. She is sure to note that this fire is blameless,
which is important because she herself recognizes that she was all too willing to fall completely for this man. Yet, by mockingly telling the man to sleep through the things that couldn't have been, Joanna critiques his lack of care for her. He does not take responsibility for the things that have resulted from this flame. He is willfully ignorant to the things that couldn't have been if he hadn't have been. Joanna then repeats a stanza from earlier in the song. As we noted last episode, the word "son" in the line "Fire moves away, son," displayed that she was speaking to the man about his past trauma, encouraging him to brush it off as no big deal and focus his attention to her. The great irony here at the end of our story is that he is now the cause of her trauma. Her telling the man that fire moves away is once again ironic because she finds herself in the situation of the man she was once trying to advise. The word "son" adds to the irony because it implies a power dynamic, as if our narrator is the parent and the man of our story is a child. This imagined dynamic between our two characters is continued in the very end of this song. After repeating the heartbreaking "Why would you say that I was the last one," we reach the outro. Joanna sings back and forth with singer-songwriter Bill Callahan. This is almost haunting when we consider the fact that Joanna was known to be in a relationship with Callahan around the time of the album being made. We cannot know for sure if Callahan is the character presented within this song, but if he is, then it only adds to the emotional vulnerability of this entire song.
Oh, my bones, they are gone, 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 gone. Take my bones, oh, I don't need none. Cold, cold, cupboard, Lord, nothing that you are. Suck my dick on a cherry stone. Dig a little hole now, 3 inches round.
The outro takes the form of a conversation between our narrator and the man. It's a call and response stanza in which Joanna sings a line and Bill responds. This style actually very closely mimics the nursery rhyme, "There's a hole in the bucket." For the sake of time and potential copyright, I'm not going to play the clips of this song or any other songs referenced in the outro. If you want to hear them, simply type in the name of each track into YouTube. I'll name each reference as it occurs. In the song, "There's a Hole in My Bucket," Henry continually presents issues to Liza, who responds by telling him what to do in order to resolve the matter. The man is portrayed as clueless and powerless here. He relies entirely on the woman to fix his problems. This is closely mirrored in our song. Bill sings things like, "All my bones, they are gone, gone, gone," and "Cold, cold cupboard, Lord, nothing to chew on," etc., while Joanna attempts to resolve each of these issues. This is undoubtedly used as a way to express the nature of this relationship in which the man used the woman as a way to try and resolve his own issues. The next nursery rhyme reference that appears is in the line, "Cold, cold cupboard, Lord, nothing to chew on." This references the rhyme "Old Mother Hubbard." That tune is about an old lady who takes care of a dog. When she reaches for a bone, she finds that she is out of them. She goes to town to buy him more, and throughout the song will continually run out to do errands for this dog. Each time she comes back, she finds that the dog is either playing a trick on her or doing something impressive like dancing or getting dressed in a suit. Despite the competence of this dog, he continues to rely entirely on the service of his caretaker. The last reference to a nursery rhyme occurs in the line, "When the bough breaks, what'll you make for me?" In the nursery rhyme, "Rock-a-bye Baby," there is a line which goes, "When the bough breaks, the cradle will fall, and down will come the baby, cradle and all." The use of this lyric in our song is similar to that in the nursery rhyme. The man is basically asking our narrator what she will do when his world comes crashing down. Now that we've noted the nursery rhyme's present, let's break down the meaning of each line. The man's bones being gone is used to symbolize his dependence on others. He is not an autonomous individual at the moment and requires the time and love of an external force to take care of him. To resolve this matter, our narrator offers to give her bones to him. This wonderfully captures the reality of the relationship. The woman is willing to go to such extreme and gross heights to take care of this man, no matter how dangerous or ridiculous. The bones are continued onto the next lines, where the man sings that he has no bones to chew on. This paints him to be a dog, which is commonly used to describe a man as a player or scoundrel. Our narrator's response to this pathetic cry is that he ought to suck all day on a cherry stone. We saw stone fruits come up earlier, and one way we interpreted the symbol was that it was meant to represent our narrator's heart. That fits very well with these lines. Our narrator offers her own heart for this man to play with so as to take care of him. "Dig a little hole" continues the symbolization of this man as a dog, and Joanna instructs him to toss the cherry stone into the hole he digs. The man then sings that he weeps upon the spot for the starving of me. This is his way of watering the spot to make the seed grow into a cherry tree. His way of watering the seed is an act of self-pity. The man then asks our narrator what she'll make for him when the bough breaks. The bough is the main branch of a tree, likely the cherry tree that grew in the last line. Here, the bough is meant to be holding up the man like a baby in a cradle, and he asks our narrator what she'll do when the bough inevitably breaks and he hopelessly falls to the floor. In response, our narrator sings that she will make him a willow cabin to rest on his knee. This is a reference to Shakespeare's Twelfth Night. The complete context of this story is not necessary to understand its importance in our song. Just know that a woman grieving the death of her brother is approached by someone in an attempt to win her favor. The woman asks what he would do if he were in love with her. In response, he says, "I would make a willow cabin at your gate, and call upon my soul within the house, write loyal cantons of condemned love, and sing them aloud in the dead of night." From that quote, we can see how the building of a willow cabin was used in a speech meant to display the lengths to which someone would go if they were in love with that person. Tying that to our song, we see the willow cabin to be a symbol of the intense love our narrator has for this man. It is important, then, that the man asks, "What would I do with a trinket such as this?" A trinket is defined as a small ornament of little value. We now know that this willow cabin is meant to have significant value. It is to serve as a reminder to the man of how much he is loved. This symbol means nothing to him, and this captures the way in which he feels about the relationship. He wants her love and attention directly and in a very physical form. It is not enough to know that he is deeply loved by her. The man then says that he is starving and freezing in his measly old bed, to which our narrator replies that she will crawl across the salt flats to stroke his head. With Bill's last vocal part, he tells her to come across the desert with no shoes on. This action just continues what has been occurring throughout this entire outro, metaphors for the way in which this relationship operates. The last lines of this stanza are gut-wrenching. "I love you truly, or I love no one." Sometimes, in relationships, sacrifices are used as a way to measure love. If you're willing to stay with them through this, or if you would go so far as to do this for them, then you must really love them. This holds some truth. Love does go hand in hand with sacrifice. But sacrifices should never be the only measure of how much you love someone. From our external point of view, we know that this relationship is detrimental to our narrator, and though she knows it as well at this point, she still tries to convince herself that their love continues on. After repeating a stanza from earlier in the song, Joanna sings, "Clear the room, there's a fire, a fire, a fire. Get going, and I'm gonna be right behind you. And if the love of a woman or two, dear, could move you to such heights, then all I can do is do, my darling, right by you." I wanted to directly quote those lines so as not to miss a word. They are some of the most moving on the entire record. She tells the man to clear the room because there's a fire. We know that fire is the one that was once in her heart but grew ever outward until it burned and destroyed everything around her. By telling the man to clear the room, she yet again is looking out for his safety ahead of her own. Joanna adds, "And I'm gonna be right behind you." Though she instructs this man to leave her because she is a lost cause, she cleverly and slyly admits that she will follow him wherever he goes. The last words of the song are desperately crushing. Heartbreaking because she accepts that she isn't enough for him. But despite this, she will still pursue him even as he pursues other women. I suppose what hurts the most about these lines is that we are at the end of our story. Our narrator knows all that has happened. She knows the pain he has caused and his lack of reciprocal love despite her best efforts. Yet, in spite of all that has happened and all that she knows, she is still in it. She is still so in love with him that she is willing to accept that he will pursue others while her heart still aches for him. Conclusions. Only Skin is the centerpiece of the album. In her own words, it is Joanna's attempt to tie together all of the events presented in the other songs of this album. It is extravagant, incredibly dense, layered, rich with symbolism, metaphors, personification, and wordplay throughout. Honestly, this track was a bit of a nightmare to analyze in this manner. Though 17 minutes long, none of it is filler. Because of this, I feel that my analysis for this track wasn't quite as good as some of the others, but I certainly gave it my all. Despite this, I think that I can provide a clear and concise synopsis of the track that could help anyone who got lost along the way. This behemoth of a track begins with the introduction of our two characters. A man and a woman lay asleep while the man is terrorized by nightmares of his days at war, wonderfully described by Joanna's use of imagery such as, "Sky was a bread roll soaking in a milk bowl, and when the bread broke, fell in bricks of wet smoke." We interpreted his traumatizing past to be symbolic of a past relationship that went awry. Woken by the man, the woman of our story, our protagonist, attempts to ease his mind by telling him that the past is the past. The plague of the greasy black engines has gone east. Upon seeing her awake, the man attempts to bed her. Him having his hands in his pockets was a reference to the character Jason Compson from The Sound and the Fury, whose hands in his pockets foreshadowed his insatiable greed. For the man in our story, this was a way to foreshadow his insatiable lust. Despite our protagonist's efforts, the man continues to attempt to explain something about his past, which we interpreted to be symbolic of a man who cannot stop talking about his ex. The story picks up in abstraction when our protagonist heads to the fishing hole. Her attempt to find nourishment for the man isn't an attempt to find food, but rather an attempt to fulfill his sexual desire. Joanna describes the love as very physical with the line, "Press on me, we are restless things." Our narrator continues to row down the river, smelling a stone fruit being opened and a low and lazy cinder smoking. We interpreted the stone fruit to be our protagonist's heart, which the man so easily cracks open, and the lazy cinder to be the flame of passion and love lit within our protagonist's heart. Suddenly, we are told that this fire moves away, followed by a tear-jerking, "Why would you say that I was the last one?" This isn't the last time we hear this line repeated in the song, and the idea behind it is one of the most prominent themes throughout the song, a false promise of love. In both the physical act of sex and the verbal exchanges between the two, the man assured our narrator that she was the last one, that he was to marry her. The line, "Scrape your knee, it is only skin," continues the expression of pain felt by our protagonist. Joanna contrasts a mild and physical injury, one that usually occurs to a child, with a crushing emotional injury. In essence, Joanna describes how physical pain is impermanent and meager compared to emotional trauma, specifically pain caused by being harmed in a romantic relationship. Joanna then sings of cutting his hair and becoming the happiest woman, which we interpreted to be an ironic reference to the story of Samson and Delilah. In that story, Delilah cuts Samson's hair, the source of his strength, leaving him powerless. The irony is revealed in the tone of her voice as she sings this section. We can be assured our narrator does not take back power from this man and is still helpless to his will. Back at the river, a seagull sings the words, "So long." The seagull, like us, watches this relationship from an outside perspective. Given this bird's eye view, he can see, even this early, that our narrator is too far gone. She is not in control of her heart anymore. Convincing herself to hold on, our narrator tells us that she is carrying candy in her pockets, so much so that the weight of it begins to drown her in the water. We interpreted this candy to be symbolic of the sex she provides her man. Sex is sweet, temporary, and unhealthy in abundance, just like candy. Joanna then aptly portrays the slut-shaming that still occurs in society today with the line, "Knowing how the common folk condemn what it is I do to you to keep you warm, being a woman, being a woman." In the repetition of the words, "being a woman," we found Joanna to be expressing the plight of all women, not just those who are destined to face this unjust scrutiny if they have sex, but so too those women who have ever given too much of their heart to a callous man. Not giving us a moment to process how powerful the previous passage was, Joanna sings of Sisyphus, the man cursed to ever roll a boulder up a hill and never reach the top. Typically symbolizing endless suffering, here the myth of Sisyphus is used to symbolize the lust of the man of our story, his unquenchable desire to fill a void in his heart with physical love. Like Sisyphus, the man in our story will never achieve his goal and will forever be searching for someone else to fulfill his needs. Joanna then sings of the strange but potent image of spiders' ghosts being hung from cherry trees before she repeats the lines, "Be a woman, be a woman." For most of us, spiders are a minor concern we have to deal with occasionally, but the hanging of these spiders contrasts this nonchalance greatly. In her attempt to downplay the effects these spiders have on her, or ghosts of old relationships, Joanna describes them as nothing but a nuisance. "Be a woman" is akin to telling someone to be brave or toughen up, and with these lines, we saw how Joanna expresses the feeling that being abandoned or taken advantage of by men is the destiny of all women. In the next section, we get to the most impressively rhymed stanza on the record. After bombarding us with a mind-numbing amount of rhymes and alliteration, our narrator dumbs it down for us, and plainly asks her heart whether or not she is still in control of it. The song breaks away from the previous imagery of the river and splashing waves, and we are returned to a scene between our two characters in an entirely separate place. Our narrator begs the man to lower his gun, an object which we interpreted as phallic symbolism. In a last-ditch effort to get this man to treat her better, our narrator attempts to show him the painful consequences of his sexual pleasures. Joanna sings of a scene where a helpless brown bird flies into a window and eventually passes away. Remembering what the bird symbolized in Sawdust and Diamonds, this is likely an allegory for the lost child Joanna was to have. After the tragic passing of the bird, we are thrown forward to an event that appears to have occurred in real life. The man comes to visit Joanna, and upon his departure, our narrator sings that she was gone, and that she got gone when she got wise. The contrast between these two ideas represents the conflicting thoughts Joanna had at the time, recognizing both that she was completely head over heels, and that he could do nothing but harm her anymore. The outro then incorporates references to nursery rhymes, another direct contrast to the crushing reality of what is being expressed here. The use of these nursery rhymes continues what has been prevalent throughout this song, an exploration of negligible pain and insufferable pain. Like the knee scraping, the lighthearted nursery rhymes directly contrast the immense and devastating pain our narrator has been suffering. We will discuss more in depth in our conclusion episode, but this is one of the most important ideas presented within this record. The heartbreaking expression of someone who thought they knew the pain of life, but had no idea of the daunting and insurmountable suffering that would come their way. At the end of the day, Only Skin is a song about a relationship. In the exploration of these emotions, it does a great many other things, and covers a plethora of concepts and ideas, many of which tie together the album as a whole. We saw a return to the use of both water and fire, excess, manipulation, death and loss, imaginary versus real, femininity, and more. I have written 15,000 words about this song, yet it still feels so out of my reach. And I wouldn't have it any other way. In my opinion, it is one of the greatest feats in musical history, making it more than worthy of such forensic analysis. But similar to all the songs on this record, we must accept that we can never know it fully. No matter how much of ourselves we give to it, this song will always remain Joanna's to know and hers alone. It's why Joanna will forever be one of my favorite artists. There is something undeniably profound and yet elusive about all of her work. At this point in her career, we can say without a doubt that she meticulously designs her work to be like this. The work calls you in, promising to reveal something great and powerful to you if you dive deep enough. With art comes analysis. The two are forever linked to each other. But this song, like all great art, resists understanding. The best artists are the greatest illusionists known to man. Their work forever leads you on to exploring deeper and deeper, but you can never seem to find the bottom. This seemingly futile chase for meaning within art is anything but. For in searching for meaning within art, we feel the expression of another human being. We empathize, and perhaps come to understand that we are not all as different as we perceive. Should this illusion ever be revealed to us in full, the magic would disappear. Art, like life, is better with a bit of mystery. That concludes today's episode. Be sure to tune in next week when we dive into the analysis of the last song of our record, Cosmia.